Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Hey everybody, welcome. This is a beautiful bit chilly everywhere across the country. Monday morning to you, or Monday noon to you here in Central Texas. It's cold out there. For those of you who are not experiencing this, enjoy the warmer weather. But it's good to have you on the program. We got a lot to talk about. Joe, are rates kind of chilly today?
Well, rates are a little better today.
Warming
up.
Not
a lot.
Yeah. There's been some volatility this morning. Let's talk about what's going on.
Well, it's kind of flattened out this morning early. We saw a little bump in prices, and it turned around pretty quickly, and we'd seen the same thing last week. But so far, it's up 5/32 on the day, and no real economic news came out today yet. So it's just moved a little bit higher, prices anyway, which means rates would be just a little bit lower. Similar thing happened last week, Dave. The mortgage rates fell just a little bit. We had a fairly weak jobs report, which was the primary reason for that, late in the week, on Friday of last week. The expectations were that we'd see about a break even in jobs, maybe just a small loss in jobs, but the announcement came in with an 85,000 job loss, which kind of surprised the market and helped push MBS prices higher and mortgage rates a little bit lower.
Yeah. That was a bit of a surprise for many, but I don't know why it's a surprise. I think we've anticipated that. But anyway, enough on – we'll go to jobs, talk about that later.
Yeah.
So,
but the other surprise last week, Dave, was the pending home sales. When you mentioned it,
it's
kind of understandable or been expected. I mean, pending home sales measure contracts, basically contracts in process, if you will. And the month of November, contracts ended significantly lower than October.
Yeah.
But
and
know,
that's
think
a,
about
go
it,
ahead.
Though. I mean, it's a home buyer tax credit. Those contracts were in existence in October because the home buyer tax credit was going to expire in at the end of November. Those contracts closed, and there just wasn't enough time in November for people to go ahead and get back in the process, and the urgency was gone. You know, that there was an urgency in October. The urgency is kind of lost. So it makes sense. The home sales were, or the pending home sales were still higher than last year. So it's after several, I think it was 9 months in a row, we saw pending home sales go up. And so November was a surprise, but it really shouldn't have been.
Yeah, it was. You're absolutely right. It was a surprise for many and going, hey, but what happens? We had the tax credit continuing. So, yeah, thanks for explaining that for many people. We were getting emails throughout the week on that. Talk about the Fed MBS purchase program. That was that continues to stay in the focus for everybody.
It's a big item. It's a big part of mortgage-backed security purchases. It's a big part of what sets your mortgage rates. During the week last week, the minutes from the prior Fed meeting were released, and everyone, you know, they scour those minutes and look for any hint of this or a hint of that, and in the minutes they found passages which would indicate that there were various Fed members who discussed maybe the possibility the need to extend the MBS purchase program. You know, and it, when you read through all that, you'll find that it's very similar to what was being said in each of the prior meetings and in various speeches by especially Bernanke, just saying, you know, we're going to react to the market. We'll see what it's like at the time, and if we need to do something, we'll consider doing something. But, you know, as it stands, we're about $125 billion more to be purchased over the next 10 weeks, and so we could average somewhere – actually it's over the next 12 weeks, so we could average somewhere about $10 billion a week in MBS purchases and have it run out just on time. And you know, to be quite honest, I kind of expect it to run out. They've said that it's going to end, and I wouldn't expect at this point that there'll be a need to, or a push anyway, to extend it prior to when it does expire. Now, after it expires, we might see some reason to get going again, but at this point, count on it ending.
Yeah, I think that's the best plan for everyone who's listening. And we've got people literally calling in from all parts of the country listening to your comments, Joe, so we appreciate all the listeners tuning in. I think the key to that is plan on the worst. But I think if we see the economic data continue to stay weak, unemployment going up, existing home sales, while that may be an aberration, we may see that continue on with a home buyer tax credit. But if, in fact, we see weak or insecure, unstable economic data, that we don't have a sustainable recovery, in other words, I think it's distinctly possible that they are going to come back in. I think there's more indication of that. But, boy, we certainly can't count on it, Joe. You're right on
with
your comments.
They may come back in on it in a different way, you know, maybe to do the same thing. But, you know, we talked last week about the announcement on Christmas Eve about the extension of or basically lifting the limit of support for Fannie and Freddie. And what that also did was allowed Fannie and Freddie to discontinue their selling of their mortgage assets, which was, you know, sort of a big thing at a time when the supply and demand factors are being challenged. But it also might give Fannie and Freddie the opportunity to buy. And
right.
You know, so at the end of March, maybe the Fed MBS purchase program is replaced by the Fannie Freddie purchase program. So who knows?
Bottom line is, we need them in the game. I think there's more evidence than that they're going to stay in the game, knowing where things are at. Let's see here. I'm looking at what do we have for the week ahead here. As we look at this,
we have a big week. We have the Treasury auctions, 3, 7, and 30 are going to be tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. And, you know, those always attract mortgage-backed security investors' attention because they are instruments, long-term fixed-rate instruments, and so demand of those is a pretty good precursor for what might happen to mortgage-backed security prices. And then we have two really big economic events next week. The retail sales is a nice barometer, a very, very important barometer of economic activity, and that comes out on Thursday at 8:30. Yeah. And then Friday, the CPI is released, and you know, it's the one of the most important measures of inflation. So CPI comes out Friday at 8:30. Retail sales Thursday at 8:30, and then Treasury's auctions Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So most every day this week has some pretty important things. There are some lesser important industrial production also comes out on Friday. So pretty important week from the economic perspective. And it seems as though the market is beginning to pay a little more attention to what is said in these economic results. The economic results seem to be improving through much of December, and that kind of caused a run-up in rates. And then we started seeing weakness in economic announcements toward the end of the year and the first part of this year are weaker than expected, and the results have been a little bit of an improvement in mortgage rates. So as the market's paying attention to this, so should you. These are important important things to know about and to be able to tell your customers about.
Yeah, next week we've got a great guest coming on to talk a lot more about, you know, bonds, what's going to happen in the secondary markets, some potential developments there. And so we're going to have on Mercy Jimenez of Covered Bond Call. That's going to be a great segment we're going to have next week in the hot topics. So, folks,
yeah, we'll talk a little bit about what, you know, the secondary market might look like in 2010. And I do think that what Mercy will talk about as she comes on next week is going to be very important to everyone to hear and to understand sort of what covered bonds are and how they might impact, you know, operational considerations for mortgage production. So should be interesting.
Should be a great program or a great segment as well. We're looking forward to that. But we got a lot to talk about yet this week. We've got coming back to us by popular demand, and is Scott Sanderson, of also with MBS Quote Line. And it's Scott, we're looking forward to having your comments as we get into discussing that that challenging GFE and the many changes there. And also, we're going to be talking about what lies ahead for 2010. Stay tuned. This is there's some hot topics beyond that. But next, we're going to have the traffic report. But let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin'.
Good to have you back, and let's get into the traffic report. Alice, Alvey, we tell you this all the time, but, you know, for someone who hates to read all this stuff as much as I do, I truly value you digesting all that's going on the legislative update, also known as the traffic report. It's a little congested out there in the traffic when it comes to legislation. What's going on, Alice?
Well, yeah, I think I've got to come up with a way to talk about it from a traffic analogy. So maybe I'm going to say traffic's at a standstill because the House isn't back yet, and neither is the Senate. The House gets back tomorrow, the 12th. The Senate gets back on the 19th. So we'll see more activity once they get back to their posts. So yeah. We haven't seen any activity in House Bill 4173. That's our big Wall Street reform bill that we've been watching, Wall Street and Consumer Protection Act. That's the big one that has the skin in the game provision that people get concerned about. The other big rule, is a proposed rule, so the Home Secure Credit Regulation Z is a proposed rule. The comment period expired, as we talked about on the last show, at the end of the year. Over 3,300 comments went in on that proposed rule, so it's called Home Secure Credit Regulation Z. This is the one with big changes to ARM disclosures. There are six new forms that come out of this bill. This is the one that has the piece in it about LO compensation. So the phrasing, just so everybody's clear, would say that it would prohibit compensation to brokers and creditors' employees who originate loans based on the loan's terms and conditions. That's the phrasing. And so it's been interpreted, you know, by industry and even the MBA to kind of say, well, then that means you can't pay based on interest rate, right, because that's a term of the loan. We're also watching the two FHA lender approval requirement. It's proposed bill, and the comment period has expired. So we're going to wait and hopefully see some action on that in the next 2 weeks. And then also we're going to be watching the SAFE Act. So HUD has proposed a change to the SAFE Act to encourage depositories to get their loan originators to be licensed as well. So we'll see if certainly the rest of loan officers who are licensed under the broker and lender world would love to see that depositories have to follow the same rules. So we're going to watch that one closely too.
Good, we appreciate that. That is going to be a significant, because it could level out the playing field. It's something we should need to talk about in another segment.
Yeah, that's a good one.
VA?
Yeah, the last thing is VA did publish their guidance for the good faith estimate, and I thought it was interesting that even though we have a frequently asked question under RESPA that says do not issue an attachment, VA said use this attachment.
So I guess
they're exempt, right? The government's exempt from following the government rules made by the other building. So anyway, I have to joke about that. But anyway, yeah, VA, because they are so tight, they are retaining the 1% origination cap. They want to see an itemization from your company on a VA loan of what's going to go behind block one, and so that you can support that if you're charging an origination fee, you don't have any other, you know, lender fees mixed into that block. So make sure you check out that VA circular to understand how to do block one.
You know, can we get the people within the Beltway talking to each other, Alice? Yeah, my goodness. Don't
well,
think of attachment.
Say, people always say, isn't VA just like FHA? And I'll just say, they're two different buildings. What makes you think those programs are the same?
which means they're worlds apart.
Right.
Oh, no kidding. Well, thank you so much. Anything else that we've left out that we haven't covered on the legislative update, Alice?
That's the legislative update for now. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well,
HUD's RESPA go. FAQ, but we'll be talking more RESPA later in the show.
We're talking about that here in just a little bit, especially with the changes. Stay tuned. We've got the next segment. We're talking about the 2010 overview, looking forward into what we can anticipate in the industry and what's coming at us. And then right after the segment, right after that, we've got Scott Sanderson and Alice getting us into talking about the GFE and then just kind of wrap it up the program. But stay tuned. We'll be right back after this word. We'll be right back with Lickin' and Lending.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Thank you goes out to Andy Alvey, who produces this for us, keeps those ads clicking, creates those. So if you're wondering who that is, it's Alice's son and a very talented Andy Alvey. Andy, thank you so much for all that you do on this to make this program sound, makes us sound at least a little bit more towards professional here. We've got last week, or over the week, actually over Christmas week, Mortgage Orb, ORB.com, republished an article that I'd written for the Secondary Marketing Magazine. Again, Mortgage Orb is owned by Zach and Pop Publications, which owns a number of that publishes a number of trade rags for our industry. And again, I wrote an article that was the cover page article for the convention that happened in San Diego, and they thought that they should run it because there was some content in there that they thought would be good for readers. I was very overwhelmed by the response it's gotten since it was posted on Mortgage Orb, the website, over the holidays. I can't begin to tell you how many people said this should be required reading for our industry. So a lot of folks said, Dave, we'd love to get Alice and Joe's comments on it. They said, great article, well written, all that kind of good stuff. But we'd like to get Alice and Joe's, and Scott, you're welcome to jump in on this as well. But one of the things that we're talking about, when you look at something like the mortgage industry, it is a bit complex, and trying to predict what the future is a bit of a challenge. But this we know. There's a liquidity crisis going on with the industry, and one of the biggest areas that have been impacted has been warehouse lines. And what we're talking about, and what I talked about in the article that we're going to get into just a bit here, is the topic of warehouse lending. Is there going to be an adequate warehouse financing for those mortgage bankers out there, independent mortgage bankers, that are going to be needing to seek additional warehouse lines, new warehouse lines, or whatever it is? The answer is yes, there's probably going to be adequate financing, but it is going to require higher capitalization standards, and so we're going to get into a discussion of that. One thing I want to point out, last year or 2 years ago, there was 120 or more documented warehouse lenders chasing anybody with just a little bit of net worth offering warehouse lines at rates and terms that were substantially at historical lows. Joe, you were one of the companies that used to offer warehouse lines. You were president of a company that was deeply involved in this. And you know what the standards are, and now that number has contracted down to less than 12 lenders. And we're seeing some signs of community banks getting more involved and coming in and offering warehouse lines of credit. A good example is we have a client up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, by the name of North Point Bank that's getting into it on a very limited basis, but at least they're getting in, expanding the program. So these are the kind of signs when you see community bankers starting to step in and fill in the void. That is a very positive sign. The other thing we're seeing is rates and terms are a bit higher. They're like tremendously higher than the lows that we experienced in the last business cycle. Alice, Joe, Scott, love to get you in. And what are you hearing on the warehouse front? Love to get your thoughts. Our listeners want to enjoy the article, but they say we want to hear from them too.
I'll weigh in. This is Joe. There's a reason that so many banks were in the business and they were chasing it as hard as they were. And that is because it's a great business to be in from a banking perspective. It's got very low risk. It turns tremendously, rapidly. And so the risk associated with the reward, the returns are outstanding. One of the reasons so many banks got out of it during 2009 was because they could. They couldn't get at anything else. They needed to shrink their balance sheet. What better than to have loans where you can say, all right, I'm not going to lend you any more, and know that what you had lent before is going to get paid back in 30 days. I mean, it's a tremendously easy way to shrink your balance sheet, and that's what they did. I hope that many, as they get into 2010, are going to refresh their thoughts on risk versus reward and the ability to have a very liquid and as you're describing now, Dave, a very nice return on a rate of return on their loan, because it's a good loan to make on a balance sheet.
Well, it's interesting, Joe, that you bring up the side about low risk, because as companies look to get into this, they saw how many companies exited, so there was this perception that, okay, what are the unknown risks that I missed? Why did they get out of this so fast? And I think you bring up a great point. It was about balance sheet. It wasn't that the loans themselves and the warehouse lines on a large scale caused a financial problem. Is that correct?
Well, it's the risk is there, no question. But it's a risk of fraud, and it could be a big time risk. We've all heard the stories about mortgage banks that double banked loans, and that means one of the banks didn't have any collateral. But if your operations are strong, especially if you can participate with somebody who already has all those operations in place, you've got the collateral of the loan, the takeout on the loan, you've got the loan itself, and you've got the company behind that originated that loan. So you've got basically three levels of protection that you're going to get paid back. And so, from that standpoint, it has features that make it much less risky than many other real estate loans.
Well,
Dave, along.
Yes, because it's got good to have you back on the program.
Well, thank you very much. I was going to say, along the lines of what you were saying about the terms and the cost of those going up, we're seeing that just in the transaction fee. And I think because there's a smaller playing field, these lenders are realizing they can. And, without naming names, just some of those have gone up, quite significantly, and that does increase the cost. And then you're also seeing these warehouse lenders, we all talk about overlays. You have Fannie Freddie, DU Freddie Mac, and then you have investor overlays, and you also have warehouse lender overlays. So,
especially for the thinner capitalized, some of the thinner capitalized companies, Scott, you're absolutely right. People that are near the warehouse lender, it's not uncommon for a warehouse lender, and realizing they do carry a good percentage of the risk in this thing for a short period of time, they're paying a whole lot of attention to how that loan is underwritten and looking a lot more at the collateral and every aspect of that loan.
Well,
good point.
Yeah, and I want to just clarify, when we've looked at these companies, it does seem, though, that they operationally, if you don't know what you're doing, you could end up with a lot more risk. So, Joe, to your point of you've got to know who the company is that you're buying loans from. One of the mistakes in the past was, they bought them from anyone, Dave, I think, as you mentioned in your article.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I mean, one of the things you look at is the stability of the secondary markets. I mean, while we're still facing is Fannie and Freddie, is the MBS program going to continue? The reality is the banks are in this thing in a big, big way. They're going to be there to be balancing it, and very encouraging. So what I'm seeing, while there has been increased rates and certainly there's been a contraction in the number of participants, two factors that I think that are going to keep warehousing less of an issue when moving into the year than I anticipated it would be was the fact that volumes are down and we're seeing enough community banks get involved in it. Another development that has developed since I wrote this article back in, I think it was late September, early October, is the announcement that Freddie Mac has already done their first pilot program with the warehouse lender out of Florida. and so Natty Mac. And so the fact that we actually have a partnership formed and actually working with Freddie Mac and Natty Mac, I think that's going to open the door to the possibility of Fannie Mae getting into it further. There's even some talk of Jenny Mae. Jenny Mae has come back and said, no, that's not going to happen. Don't anticipate that development. But I do anticipate that possibly Fannie Mae, based on the success of Freddie Mac's program with Natty Mac, will see them get involved. A lot of Macs there, Natty Mac, Freddie Mac. So anyway.
Well, Dave, I have a question for you then. If your inclination is that Jenny Mae's not going to get into it, there is that piece of FHA, the 21st Century Housing Act for FHA, is saying that FHA may get into it. Well, would they only get into it if Jenny Mae did? Is that a mutual relationship?
Well, it's a mutual relationship. I mean, you know, the two are absolutely tied together. But the problem with Jenny Mae is that they're so understaffed that it would have to change the scope of what they're doing. It is distinctly possible they could, and it would just take enough funding to do that. But I really think what all of these guys are talking about doing, I mean, all the agencies, Fannie, Freddie, and Jenny, to the extent, or HUD, would be a secondary facility. In other words, it would go on a primary warehouse facility, and then they would come through and sweep that facility. In other words, pay off the primary fund warehouse line within 24 or 48 hours is kind of what we've looked at. So it's to be developed, but the fact that they're even still talking about it, Alice, is probably what's most encouraging for those of us who have been deeply concerned about the future of warehousing and how much availability there will be for independent mortgage bankers. So there's another development in that area that's somewhat related, and I was quoted in an article over the holidays, the fact that Warren Buffett is rumored to be looking at GMAC ResCap, specifically ResCap, to make a significant investment in there, and they have a warehouse lending arm. So there's enough going on out there that we should be encouraged that while there is certainly a shortage and a contraction in the warehouse lending markets, there is a distinct possibility that may not be quite as inhibiting and have the negative consequences as that we anticipated earlier in the year. So when I originally wrote the article, so there's a little bit of positive developments on the warehouse lending. It's titled "The Warehouse Lending Woes." But what is happening is higher capital requirements. It's something that is just without question. We're seeing those thinly capitalized independent mortgage bankers struggling. They're going to need to raise capital. We watched HUD now, Alice, as you brought forth this in the mortgage or in the legislative update. New capital requirements. HUD's now by the end of 2010, you got to be at $1 million. What we've talked about in the program, for those that have not necessarily tuned in and listened to us, it's still there. You can go back and listen on Blog Talk Radio, log into our website there, Lickin' on Lending, and within Blog Talk, look at all the podcasts and download that. So we won't repeat all of that we've already talked about, but it is significant to point out that the higher capitalization requirements are going to have a consequence on as many as 10,000 companies. There's a 14,000 approved HUD Eagle companies in the United States today. 10,000 of them, Alice, is what you reported, are below the minimum net worth requirement as of 12/31/2010 of $1 million. And then I believe it's 2 years later, you have to be north of at a threshold of $2.5 million. Is that correct?
3 years.
3 years. So 3 years out, but 2 years. So we have 1 year to get to $1 million, and then you have another 2 years after that to get to $2.5 million. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
That's correct.
I want to make sure I've got my head that right. That's what I've been reporting, talking to our clients. The good news is there's a capital to be available out there. Where else are you going to get a return, anything more than just bare bones minimum rates? So there is capital available, and if you're interested in that, we got strategies that I talk about in earlier programs. We're in our consulting firm, Mortgage Banking Solutions, can help you locate and develop help you identify how to get capital. And we're getting phone calls now from people saying we may be willing to invest in that. So there may be more than just us helping you and showing you how to do it, but we actually may have some people we're talking to that are willing to invest. So give us a call if that's a need that you have. Joe, you seeing the value of increased capital requirements, certainly in the secondary markets. What's your thoughts on that development?
Well, first I'd say skin in the game in the form of equity is a whole lot better than a mandated, regulated 5% of every loan you sell. So if it's, there's no question that the industry needed more capital to support its operations and its ongoing obligations, but much rather have it in the form of equity than having to retain or manage that unwieldy sort of process that is in the legislation. So let's go one or the other. As far as the secondary market goes, you know, Fannie, Freddie, Jenny obviously are dominating the market, and something is going to happen with Fannie and Freddie sometime down the road. 2010 is probably too early for anything dramatic to happen. We've talked about MBA's proposals, and they would suggest that Fannie and Freddie kind of go away as Fannie and Freddie, but get replaced in substance with entities that perform much the same thing, just basically have a start over on their balance sheet. That might begin to take hold sometime during 2010, but I look for the secondary market to be pretty similar. We mentioned covered bonds.
Yes.
We'll talk again, we'll talk next week about covered bonds, but they're a vehicle through which secondary markets could begin to sell mortgages to investors, and that vehicle by its nature has skin in the game, and so, you know, it sort of meets those a lot of the current definitions of what should happen in with mortgages in the secondary market. But you know, I look for the government to stand behind most everything that gets securitized and sold. It's an unfortunate thing that we've grown to rely on, and investors have grown to rely on. It has kept rates lower than they would be otherwise. But I certainly look for the government to have to be involved in making mortgage investments attractive to anyone who chooses to buy them.
Well, that's a good opener for the next topic I wrote about, which is legislative. I want to say this before we go to the legislative tsunami that's coming up, people, and we covered that so much already, but is the fact that if you're looking at capital requirements saying, is this game over for me? You maybe, you know, have no clue how to do that. There are a number of strategies that we can talk to you about and how you can do that. We're talking to a number of mortgage brokers out there, originators, small mortgage bankers and brokers that are combining forces to get their net worth up and saying, how much you got? Let's ante in. Let's go, y'all get in the same boat and get big enough so we don't fail. So there's a too big to fail, and you can create your own too big to fail scenario. If you know how to do that, if you don't know how to do that, give us a call. If you're working on that and running into some issues, we'd be thrilled to talk to you. But let's get into the next segment. We cover this every week, Alice, but regulations galore. And what you're talking about, Alice, each week on the Legislative Update is just that which is going on in Washington, D.C. What is going on in all 50 states is not being reported. It's just a full-time job for you to look at what's going on at the national level. But at every state across the union, we are seeing regulations coming in. And do you want to give some thoughts on that, Alice? I mean, I know you're trying to get an idea of it, but you're so busy training on our next topic.
Well, it's interesting because you still, you know, I keep calling it that it is still the really like an eye of the hurricane thing. You know, the collapse of the subprime is and the collapse of the real estate market. It's almost like we're still feeling that tidal wave of regulations that came out of that, and Congress people still grappling with trying to come up with how they can get their name, you know, out in front of being a person who's helped contribute to saving housing in some way or save the economy.
Yep.
And so you just, each state is still going after predatory lending laws where, you know, we're all 30-year fixed rate. who's closing option arms right now? I don't know. and, you know, so I think that's the part that gets a little frustrating is they've put some good regulations in place. I guess people would argue good or not, but okay, we've got RESPA. Let us absorb that. Let us absorb MDIA from last year and see the improvement to consumer and work on some enforcement issues, you know, instead of just still trying to come up with more stuff to just keep slowing the process down and ultimately cost consumers more money. I think that's the challenge right now is a lot of these regulations are just going to raise costs.
Yep, it is without question. We've gone from a period, to borrow that saying of Alan Greenspan's, we've gone from irrational exuberance to irrational regulation, and it's not just at the state level. You that are listening to this program, we got a good number of listeners again today, and we thank you so much for tuning in. But more than anything else, get involved in your local state associations. It is amazing to me, of all the things that are going on there, just astounding, amazing, is how quiet most of the industry has been and how there's been a lack of involvement. No, I'm not promoting all the PACs in the world, and yes, you better hang on to every dollar you can, but you know what? You getting involved with your PACs, coordinating with those that are fighting for you at the state level, in your state, I cannot stress that enough. And it's more, as we've talked about on this program many times, it's more than just saying, this is going to put me out of business. For some of the regulators, they're going, fine, get some of the ones out of the business. I'm telling you, you need to be very specific with how to address the issues. Talk to them about when you say, this is going to not affect just my business, but it's going to affect consumers. Like you were talking, Alice, it's going to slow down the process, add higher cost to many of them, and unfortunately, many are going to be forced out of business at the higher capitalization requirements, and many are throwing up their hands. And then it comes back to this, who's going to be there to serve the consumer?
Right. Well, I would give one recommendation here. The Mortgage Action Alliance that the Mortgage Bankers Association has, they just issued an announcement, their free newsletter. You can go to themortgagebankers.org, and it summarized everything that they've done in the last year. It also summarized stuff that's still on their plate that they're fighting. And I think if you just take a look at that, and some people go, I don't want to read all that. You go, yeah, but you got to scroll twice just to see the list. That's enough motivation to go, okay, I better pay attention to this stuff. There's a lot out there.
Let's move on to the next. We got two more topics that I wrote about in this article that I want to talk about. Technology, just a real quick update there. I don't think we're going to see any new advances in technology. Just the fact that people are just holding on to their production dollars and it's not investing a lot in new technology. I think what you're going to see is those that had not gotten themselves established with products and did not get the critical mass are going to struggle to stay alive. That's not to say they won't stay alive, but they're going to be struggling to do so. And then watching the transformation, the number of people coming and going out of the industry. So there is going to be sales going on out there in the world of technology, but I don't think we're going to see a lot of innovation come in, at least for the next 24 months. So pick your vendor very carefully. I think it's one of the things I would suggest there is so important that you make sure that your vendor is well capitalized on a place, on a secure foundation to be able to ride out the storm. They're riding out the storm right alongside you. And you might want to look at one of the things I would recommend you look at is look at how many their customers are losing. What does that mean to their licensing fees and their overall revenue? Sales and marketing, we're seeing the public opinion pendulum swings so far against us, and it comes back to the legislative update. I'll tell you this, more and more we're seeing those that have focused on cost, driving down costs, are probably in the best position to survive and do well. And I know, Scott, you've seen this out there. There's a lot of people that have paid just a horrific amount of compensation out. Not to say that you can't still make a good living, but we're certainly seeing compensation being adjusted as far as what loan officers are earning. The days of 90% splits, I don't know. I think there's an argument that say a lot of that may be in jeopardy of continuing.
Well, yeah, you know, that was always mind-boggling to me going through the years. And, you know, you touch on it in your article about early payment defaults and all of the risk being pushed back to the ultimate originator of the loan. And I think we're finally seeing lenders, employers realize that those are real costs of doing business. And while it may not be terribly measurable loan by loan, that risk needs to be accounted for. And those 90% splits were, you know, frankly, way out of kilter.
You know, yep.
For, you know, not only for the amount of work, but just for the risk. So, yes, seeing it.
We're seeing it. I think one thing Alice brought up in the legislative segment is the fact that there's going to be more of a level playing field when it comes to who has to be licensed. The fact that banks may be subject to the same licensing requirements as independents, I take that as good news. I don't mean to be offending anyone out there that's in the banking world, but it really is a case where to try to level out the playing field so we can keep as many healthy participants. When you hear that statement, don't worry. There's going to be more business out there than you ever have dreamt of to take advantage of. Joan and Alice, you have anything more we want to add to this topic? We've run this fairly long. We've got an important one of the GFEs coming up just in a minute. Any
well,
more?
Just a quick comment on sales and marketing. When you have as much change as we have, when you're no longer relying on computers to give you the answer that this borrower is approved, and that happened 95% of the time, I think that gives an advantage, a tremendous advantage to an originator, a salesperson that really knows what he's doing and can communicate
yes.
well with their customers. So those of you out there who are on top of these changes, who understand and can communicate well with your customers, you're going to see a tremendous advantage in your opportunities in 2010.
You know, I'd like to interject there. Joe, you're so right on, and I've said it. It really is bringing some of the loan officering, if you will, back into the business, because 4 years it was all about automated findings and simply validating those findings, and now there is some underwriter discretion involved in your communication skills, your knowledge of guidelines, your ability to negotiate and reason with underwriters is becoming so much more important, because underwriters are cautious right now and being very careful. And so your ability to assist your customer in terms of presenting their story can really give you an advantage, just like you said, Joe.
Well, let's go on to the next topic. We've got a hot one, but let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after this word.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Well, it's good. Welcome back. This is Dave Lickin with Lickin and Lending. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you more. There's changes to the GFE, and that is something that is really creating, let's put it this way. I think it's good for the airline industry. You say, what in the world the changes in the GFE have to do to make it good for the airline industry? Well, you see, Alice has had to get on more flights, and she single-handedly is probably going to bail out the airline industry, because she is flying all over the country to the point she's running her body ragged. She's on the program with a cold. So we've got Scott and Alice that are going to kind of walk us through some of the changes. Alice, what are the changes, and what are you hearing in your training sessions?
Well, I think, you know, we're getting it boiled down to a few issues, as everybody now is really starting to try and use the form in their daily life, and that's why we wanted to have Scott on the show, because he's in that group who's trying to use it every single day, and we wanted to get a chance to share with our listeners exactly what people are trying to get, trying to work their way through. And one of the things Scott and I were starting to talk about just before the show is, why can't people be consistent on this, that there are differences between, attorneys' opinions and investor opinions. Scott, did you want to let's start there and let's get your two cents on the differences and some of the things you're seeing.
Yeah, in big picture, obviously it's a lot for us to digest. And what I've found really interesting is, while we've known this is coming for a year, there's a lot of hurry up and wait sense about this. And there was a lot of work going on behind the scenes with the investors and systems and compliance and so on. But in terms of being communicated to the origination staff, we really saw those efforts begin in December. And, all of a sudden, January 1, it's here and now. And so it's a major change and a lot to digest, so we're all still getting our hands around it. And my observation is, the biggest thing about it is it's new and different, and it's very analogous, in my opinion, to YSP being disclosed years ago, that it was a very big deal, but at the end of the day, it wasn't the end of the world. We will adapt, and it's just a matter of figuring out how to fill out the form, number one, communicate what that form means to your borrowers, and then, you know, weave that into your sales presentation.
What's the biggest thing you found in communication that's different?
It's interesting. I think HUD's stated goal was to, really create a level playing field, and for the borrowers, create less confusion. Well, level playing field, check. Less confusion, kind of the expression these days is not so much, at least not so far. In that, you know, really, when a borrower comes into your office, there are really a couple of things that are really important to them, and that's what's my monthly payment and how much will it take me to close. And then you could add in there interest rate. And quite frankly, the form doesn't do a great job of disclosing any of that. The interest rate it does once you're locked. But, you know, there is no clear PITI payment, and there is no clear what's the dollar amount I bring to closing. That said, it does make it easy for comparison shopping, assuming all lenders are on the same page in the way they disclose. But, you know, from a specific challenge standpoint, you know, obviously, I think we've all seen that total origination costs can be just a horrifically scary number to a borrower. And it really relates to nothing in terms of what kind of cash is going to be required. And it's interesting, you had said earlier, Alice, that, you know, there's HUD has been clear, you can't append this, you can't make any attachments, and that VA would come out and say, yeah, but put an attachment on this thing.
Right, here's what's behind block one, yeah. Well, yeah. I wanted to put that to you about the cost of the financing. If you guys, we had a customer call us up today and say, okay, I've got a jumbo loan. My yield spread is going to be $15,000, but I want to turn around and give $10,000 of that. You know, that's going to be a credit back to the customer for their costs. Now, it's a big loan amount. That's why that number's so big. You know, but yeah, you have to show the $15,000 in the revenue coming in and the $10,000, and those are huge numbers, like you were saying, to consumers in just those first couple of lines of the form.
They really are. And, you know, going back to what Joe had said earlier about communication skills and so on, we're going to all have to figure out the way we present this and really, you know, decipher it for the borrower, because at the end of the day, these borrowers, they're going to buy three or four homes or get three or four mortgages in their lifetime. And to think that a four-page government form can make that simple is, you know, not realistic. And so what we've done internally with advice of our attorneys, and I think it's important to point out here and touch on what you said, Alice, that the interpretation and legal advice that companies are getting can vary depending on who their attorneys are. But we have created really just a common sense document that's on our website and that we send out with an origination package. It's not in any way represented as a good faith estimate, but it's more of a summary of the transaction that allows us to be more realistic in the numbers the borrower can expect in terms of what happens to your earnest money, what costs are the seller paying, is the seller paying on your behalf, and so on. So we boil the transaction down to real life for the borrower.
That's great. I think a lot of companies have had to develop their own summary of a transaction, and we've been proofing those for many companies who've tried to say, okay, is this okay, or did I go too far? We've seen a couple of them that have gone way too far and really are an attempt to undo the purpose of the GFE with too much trying to say, basically, here, look at this form and ignore the GFE. So you've got to be careful with that summary of the transaction that, like you brought up, it shows payment, it shows summary of information, and it shows funds to close. Those aspects are fine. It really is the cost of financing. That's what you have to think of the GFE. It's just the cost of the financing.
One of the questions someone just tweeted in here to me is a comment or a question saying, is this going to, in your opinion, and he wants it from all three of you, is in your opinion, is this going to increase or increase the probability of borrower shopping or inhibit the borrower shopping?
You know, I tell you, my opinion on that, notwithstanding the comparison block that HUD offers up in the new GFE, you know, I, as an originator, will not issue an official good faith estimate until I have a complete loan application. I think borrowers are going to be reluctant, if in fact other originators follow that same practice, going to be reluctant to actually submit a complete loan application or all the essential six elements necessary to constitute an application to multiple lenders. You know, initially, I believe this will be a little problematic for all of us because, you know, A, we're going through our own struggles, and B, you know, those that are compliant may be a little ahead of the curve in terms of not everyone being compliant right up front. So that level playing field may come a little later in the process as a few originators or a few lenders don't disclose properly up front. Maybe they disclose in a way that is advantageous to them, but ultimately they see the error of their ways or somebody points out the error of their ways, and we all get back to following this form as it was intended to be followed. But I, you know, HUD says that the average borrower is going to save $700 in all their case studies and so on. You know, I certainly haven't done case studies, but it remains to be seen. I can tell you, unless I have a complete application, they will not get the new GFE from our organization because, you know, it's been characterized as not a good faith estimate, but a good faith guarantee. Yeah, we just all have to be so very careful because what you put out there is basically what you're standing by, and you know you better have all the information that you're going to make your loan decision on before you put out proposed terms and settlement costs.
I think it's going to change the customer, the way the customer shops. So, you know, to that question of, you know, is it going to restrict customer shopping? Yeah, they're not going to be able to go around and get five good faith estimates from anybody like they used to and, you know, be able to kind of dial for dollars all the time because if you look at the companies, like we've talked about, are going to have to elevate their expertise and their communication to the consumer to say, look, this is a different form today in a different world. I've had some companies say they're not even going to issue a GFE until they have a firm bottom line purchase agreement. Before, you might have done one, somebody was putting in an offer, maybe the offer hadn't been fully accepted yet, but you wanted to be out in front there. But too much can change on the bottom line. And you want to make sure you've got that bottom line contract before you proceed. So I think it'll, you know, stop a customer from moving around a lot. I think it will, and it'll change the way they shop initially.
You know, and Alice, I agree with that. And, you know, from the all's not doom and gloom, I really see that as an upside. And I don't mean that from the standpoint that the consumer, you know, is going to be disadvantaged. But from our standpoint, you know, the consumer can really dictate, you know, your move or your day. And, you know, we get multiple requests for GFEs, and I was never a huge fan of putting my hat in the ring with six or eight good faith estimates because it'd be very confusing to a borrower. You want to have the opportunity to sit down or over the telephone, present the transaction and yourself so it's decommoditized, if you will.
Right.
So for originators out there, you know, I think ultimately that's an upside. If you get a shot at this thing, you have a chance to communicate. And, you know, if it comes to it, put your good faith estimate out there. And I really think that, you know, ultimately you will be one of the few true good faith estimates that borrower is looking at.
That, you know, that's a good point. We're getting some more emails. Boy, this is bringing about a lot of response from our audience right now. By the way, you can get to your comments to me immediately through a tweet. David Licken. All spelled, all pushed together, or you can go to LinkedIn, and I'll be able to immediately see your response if you put a comment up there about that we have on there about the radio program. One of the questions that just came in is, I'm an online originator. I don't have I'm working through the Internet. Is this going to change the game for me? If so, how?
You know, I hear these ads on the radio that say apply 24/7, get a good faith estimate right away. And I'm curious to see how these lenders are dealing with this. You know, maybe it's not an official good faith estimate. Maybe it's a document similar to what we've created. But I would say if you're an online originator, in the sense that, you know, the HUD has established six essential elements that constitute an application, at which point you must, at which point you must disclose. And I would say if you were issuing a good faith estimate prior to having those six items, then yes, it will and it should, because otherwise you're putting out something that you're committing to without having the information you need to make a credit decision.
Yeah, I think it depends on, too, what type of online origination. You know, if it's always meant to be, you know, in the past, some of the online origination companies were kind of a run-in, try and grab the lead and not really kind of serve as that mortgage advisor. I think, yes, it's going to hurt those companies' businesses, because you won't be able to issue a good faith estimate until you're willing to take a real application and the customer's able to commit. And by the way, on, you know, TBDs, you won't be issuing a GFE. I think online origination is a little bit of a disadvantage here.
Yeah, that's what they were concerned about, if it is a disadvantage. Joe, you've been kind of quiet through this discussion. You got any thoughts? We've just got about 4 minutes to let Rusty on the program, so we're going to kind of go through a wrap-up here. What's your thoughts on all this?
I'm just glad somebody else is originating loans.
It has gotten certainly a little more complicated. But, Alice, isn't this form actually helping in certain regards, cleaning up some things? I mean, there is, while there's some negative aspects to any learning anything, any changes can proceed as negative. But, I mean, isn't this really kind of help cleaning up aspects of the disclosure process?
Yeah, I think people have to look at, you know, stop trying to figure out how you're going to fit a square peg in a round hole. This is your new world. Customers like grouped fees. It works for them to be able to understand the form better. I don't, Scott, have you seen that so far in any of them that you've taken? Do you see the easy, you know, see that
yeah, not,
consumers?
Notwithstanding the scary number
right
up front, yes, I would agree with that. That, you know, if in fact you do have good faith estimates side by side, it does make that comparison easier. I don't think it helps with the clarity in terms of the details of the transaction and what will actually happen.
Right.
And that's where the loan officering comes into it.
Yep.
Well, this is, if there was ever a time, you know, the loan officer is going to be more integral and important in the process, it's going to be now. I think, you know, the good news is you look at the overall dynamics of our industry and you look at where we're at. You have to ask yourself this number one question. Is the need for real estate finance going away? Absolutely not. And then the second question is you ask yourself is, and these are all rhetorical questions as far as I'm concerned, is what has happened to the landscape? It looks like a scorched earth, whatever tsunami, you name whatever catastrophe has taken place and whatever metaphor you want to use, but the reality is we've watched the industry contract like never. I've been at this for 37 years. And I've never seen an industry contract such as this has. And, yeah, volumes are down, but it is contracted substantially beyond the volume levels that are there. So that means while we may be dealing with lower volume levels, the reality is we still have a tremendous opportunity for you to succeed and prosper. Yes, there's higher capital requirements, and, yes, you're going to be looking for new warehouse lines. You may need some extra help. Call us. We'll be happy to help you. You may need extra training. Give Alice a call. Lord knows you're going to need to watch what's going on, the volatility in markets. You got Joe out there working with you on those things. There's a lot of good reason to be encouraged about your business. We are looking at companies. One of the things we do as a part of our business, we look at companies on behalf of warehouse lenders. We go in and do audits. We're seeing some very encouraging earnings reports by those that have been able to hang in here 3 years. So don't give up. The industry is going to be going through some twists and turns, but it is going to be a tremendous year for those that can continue and persevere and go through these. Thank you so much, Scott, for joining us this week. Good to have you here. Alice and Joe, as always, we will just appreciate your contribution. We're out of time, folks. We're down to 1 minute or less remaining. Want to just say thank you for dialing in, and come back next week. We'll be here. We'll be talking about the same topics and a whole lot more. But next week, special guest, Mercy Jimenez, about the covered bonds. We look forward to having you then.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com.
Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from MBS Quote Line, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.